KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
The FAA gave Boeing inspection and repair guidelines and has asked them to report back to them. Leaders of the Boy Scouts of America are gathering in Texas today to vote on whether or not to allow openly gay scouts to join. Former Washington State Attorney General Rob McKenna is a former Eagle Scout and is leading the Washington delegation at the meeting. He says Washington is voting in favor of allowing gay youth to become members, but he says he has no idea how the National Council vote will go. McKenna maintains that since the military dropped its don't ask, don't tell policy, that there's no reason to keep an exclusion of gay youth in scouting.
For a long time, the scouts have said, well, what's good enough for the military is good enough for us. And that went away, and that really gave impetus to making the changes in scouting.
Results of today's vote are expected around 3 this afternoon. The issue of whether or not scout leaders can be gay is not being considered at this meeting. McKenna spoke with Marcy Silman this morning on Weekday. The entire interview will be available online. I'm Lisa Brooks, KUOW News.
Support comes from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, proud sponsors of StoryCorps, celebrating American stories and American lives. Did you go to prom? How was it? We want to hear your prom story. Send us an email at weekday@kuow.org. We'll be talking about prom memories coming up in about 10 minutes. 53 degrees. Overcast in Seattle, expecting a high today around 60, partly sunny, kind of a variety pack today. Sunbreaks, showers, thunderstorms, and hail. Tonight, look for a low around 48, a 50-50 chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening. Friday's high in the mid-60s, warming up a bit, partly sunny, a 40% chance of showers. And Friday night, a low around 48, mostly cloudy, with a 30% chance of showers.
From KUOW Seattle, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. The month of May means allergies to some people, longer days to others, and to high school students, most high school students, it means the annual prom. Did you go to yours? What do you remember? Email us at weekday@kuow.org and stay tuned this hour for more. King County's unemployment rate hit 4.4% in April, and in official circles, that means full employment. Joining us with more about this story, Seattle Times business and economics columnist John Talton. Hi there, John.
Hi, Marcy. Nobody would go with me to my prom.
Oh, well, nobody even asked me to my prom. So if we wanted to recreate proms now, we could go with our respective spouses and relive our youth. Let's talk about this unemployment rate. This, I am assuming, 4.4% is the lowest rate since the recession?
It is.
And is this a good number?
It's a good number with some asterisks. And those would be that we don't know the quality of the jobs that are being created. Given our economy, they're probably pretty good. But all in all, nationally, when you look at the jobs that have been created since the recession, they tend to be lower wage jobs. They tend to not have benefits. And so, yes, this is good news, but it's not completely all good news.
Why are we seeing a drop in the unemployment rate in general here?
Well, we have a much more robust and diverse economy than most metro areas. The places that are recovering very well are the places that are technology-focused, that are very open to worldwide connections, and energy cities like Houston and Oklahoma City.
How do we compare to the rest of the state of Washington?
Oh, we're way better. And even within wider Puget Sound region, you know, Pierce County unemployment is 8%. Grays Harbor is above 12%, and so we're back to the two Washingtons. But when you look at King County separately, it's doing very well.
And what about other parts of the country? You mentioned energy centers, but are other parts of the country seeing a general uptick in employment?
It all depends on what you consider an uptick. Yes, there is slow growth in jobs. We still have 11 million people unemployed, and so 7.5% unemployment now is considered a victory. 10 years ago, it would have been considered a crisis. We, at the rate with which we're creating jobs, it'll be another 4 years before we get to pre-recession employment, and that's assuming we don't have another recession.
This 4.4%, who did this calculation?
This is from the state, which follows national guidelines, and it will then go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics in Washington.
But I understand that another set of numbers out of the federal government shows that King County actually had a higher increase in unemployment last year. So it's kind of a little contradiction.
I don't know if they go into the county level, and you may know more than me. What I do know is that Washington State as a whole has a very high, what they call U6, which is the widest count of the unemployed. It includes the people who are part-time workers who want full-time work and can't find it. It includes discouraged workers. And at the last count, I believe at the end of 2012, it was at 16.5%.
That's quite high.
It is. It is alarmingly high.
Well, so this 4.4%, is there an indication, this was for the month of April, whether this will hold through, or are we going to see even less unemployment?
Things are very uncertain. Anecdotally, I can tell you that the Boeing cutbacks have not been factored into this yet because they haven't taken hold. And so there are certain announcements such as those that could drive unemployment higher here again. On the other hand, the software industry is hiring some, not a huge numbers. Amazon keeps hiring like gangbusters. Construction's going very well. We have infrastructure improvements going with the tunnel and with light rail construction. And so there are a number of reasons why we'll hold in the general neighborhood. It might tick up a little bit with Boeing.
It's interesting. So essentially, good news with the asterisks that, you know, some of these are jobs that pay well. Some of them might not be family wage jobs that we've added, but 4.4% means we've got full-ish employment in King County.
And for America today, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it is indeed. John, thank you for taking time to explain these numbers to us.
Thanks, Marcy.
John Talton's a business and economics columnist for the Seattle Times. You hear him every third Wednesday on weekday on KUOW Seattle.
W949. Support for KUOW comes from the Snoqualmie Tribe Fund, caring about community stewardship and culture. Proud supporters of the National Parks Conservation Association. More about the Snoqualmie Tribe and its community investments, programs, and services is at SnoqualmieTribe.com.
The KUOW smartphone app makes it easier than ever to listen. To find it, just search for KUOW in the iTunes Store or Android Market.
Regional coverage of the environment through EarthFix, a Northwest Public Media partnership, is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Real Networks Foundation.
52 in Seattle, gray skies, expecting a high today near 60, partly sunny, but with a chance of showers this afternoon.
So, if you don't have a date for prom, you want to go with me?
What?
Prom. It's on Friday. I know it's kind of late notice and all, but it's...
I don't like being tricked.
There's no girl in school who will go to the prom with me.
Listen, you're smart, you're sweet, you're a little strange, but that's what makes you interesting. You keep asking, and I'm sure you'll find some girl who'll be thrilled to go with you.
Hey, what?
It happened. He asked me. I accept.
accepted.
Well, congratulations.
This is supposed to be the biggest year of our lives. Prom, parties, homecoming. We're supposed to have memories.
You know what happens at proms?
Yes, Daddy, we'll dance, we'll kiss, we'll come home. It's not quite the crisis situation you imagine.
Kissing, huh? That's what you think happens? Got news for you. Kissing isn't what keeps me up to my elbows in placenta all day long.
Oh, from 94.9 KUOW, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman, and if that doesn't get you in the prom mood, I don't know what will. Last weekend, I had a very close brush, my closest brush with the high school prom. My son's a high school senior. He, his date, and a gaggle of friends were gathered for the pre-prom parental photo op. The girls were very sparkly. The boys were very nervous. The parents were kvelling, which is Yiddish for full of pride. I never did go to my high school prom. It was a different era. And to be totally truthful, I was a big nerd and I still am a big nerd. So my secondhand experience was as close as I'm going to get to the prom. But perhaps you have wonderful memories or bad memories. All of us at Weekday started to wonder what you remember from your prom. Did you go? Was it fun, painful, romantic, the best thing that you've ever done, the worst experience you've ever had? 206-543-5869 is our phone number, 1-800-289-5869. And to inspire you while you're calling, 206-543-5869 with your stories and prom memories. Producer Katie Sewell grabbed a tape recorder yesterday and she asked people to share their experiences with the high school prom, and here's what she heard.
I am almost 6'1", and not exactly the first girl that came to mind for dates for going to dances. I finally decided to ask my boyfriend to prom, and even though I was kind of a jock and pretty awkward and a bit of a tomboy, I decided for prom I would go all out. I got my hair done, I wore pink, which I never wore. It felt for me like an opportunity to let go of my awkwardness. I felt like I was experiencing what the other half experienced most of the time.
Just a fool in love.
My prom was really pathetic. My girlfriend for senior year had just broken up with me, and so I got set up with this girl who was super cute. We went to prom and never saw each other again. We totally connected. I mean, honestly, I was like totally smitten, but nothing ever came of it.
So prom was the first time I'd been asked out, and I'd been hinting this guy for weeks. We were both literature nerds, so he took a copy of our favorite book, which is Pride and Prejudice, and he wrote in the inside cover a very nice note asking me to prom, and he didn't sign it, he just underlined a passage in the book that would very clearly reveal the identity. I was a... very shy, but also very touched.
When I was in high school, I decided not to go to prom, and I decided to see the band Sonic Youth at the Moore Theater with a couple friends of mine. I think when I was in high school, I was more into music and radio and that sort of thing, and things like football games and proms really weren't that important to me. Though we did try to crash the prom afterward, but we got lost and couldn't find where it was at.
I hope and pray that someday that
I went to 7 proms total, none of which I was asked to. 2 freshman year, 2 sophomore year, 3 proms my junior year, including 1 I threw and 1 I crashed, 2 my senior year, and then 1 when I was in college. My junior prom, I was prom princess, and I didn't have a date, so I stood out there in the spotlight alone. The last prom I went to, I was actually in college, and my boyfriend at the time begged me to do him a favor by going with his little brother's best friend who had just been dumped. So that day I went and bought a $20 dress and went to prom with a 17-year-old and got kicked out of that prom for smoking cigarettes. I never had a good time at any of those proms. I hated prom. I think the reason I went to so many is I kept trying to have that amazing prom experience, and it never happened.
I fall in love with you.
Oh, are you a fool? Were you a fool at your prom? 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. People have called and hung up, but call back, 206-543-5869. Mary writes, we were in Chicago and four of us went together as great friends and sort of dates. We had dinner at the top of the Sears Tower, and when we popped a cork on the champagne, which was fully sanctioned by our parents, the cork literally bounced off the four walls and landed in a glass. It was just kind of magic, and it stayed with all of us for more than 30 years. The rest of the night was not remarkable at all, just the typical, my date left with another girl, my friend ended up crying, another friend stole a boyfriend, the usual. I'm not sure, is that the usual for proms? I have no idea. Carrie writes, on Monday, I was shopping at Top Foods, which is now Hagen Foods in Shoreline, during high school lunch. Shorewood High School is just a few blocks from there. A guy's voice came on the loudspeaker and said, will you go to the prom with me? And a second later, a female voice, a little older, said, for those of you who couldn't hear, her answer was yes. It brought a smile to my face, and I texted my prom date, who was one of my closest friends in high school. We still are today. Memories from prom, we're soliciting them as we head into the end of many people's senior years in high school. Mine was long, long ago. I didn't go to the prom, but maybe you were luckier than me. Hi, Debbie and Graham. You're on the air. Debbie?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, on my prom night, I actually was working at Mr. V's Underground. I was a strolling accordionist through there for that one night. And it just so happened that it was on that night, too. So after I did that little gig down there and walking for 3 hours down there, I went to my prom, and I was so tired that I fell asleep during my prom and practically missed the thing. So.
Oh, no. But you were there.
Yes.
Did you take the accordion with you?
Oh, no. I left that in the trunk of the car. So.
Did you have time to change into a fancy dress?
Yes, I did. From Seattle all the way to Tacoma, so I had time in the car to change.
Well, that'll be memorable. At least you know that you got some sleep while you were at your senior prom, Debbie. Thanks.
The whole thing, woke up and everybody was cleaning up. So.
Oh, no. Well, thanks for that story, Debbie and Graham, wherever you're listening. Maybe you thought prom was the dorkiest thing ever and you would never have been caught dead at prom. We'd like to hear that too. 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. Robin writes, my prom as a class of 1980 senior was a wonderful night, and I am still with my date to this day. We got married in 1984. Well, that's very nice. Hi, Jerry in Seattle's Pioneer Square. You have a memory of your prom?
I do. So I went to a couple proms during my high school time, in my senior prom. I didn't really care too much about it, so I just wanted to go with a friend. Mm-hmm. So I went with a friend that I'd grown up with and through middle school and whatnot. And she was dating somebody else at the time who ended up going with her best friend instead. They kind of decided to go separately for some reason. And we all crashed a hotel room afterwards. We had a great prom and whatever. So we all kind of passed out after drinking, maybe.
And, maybe.
I passed out in bed next to her, my date's best friend, and woke up to her and my date's boyfriend.
Oh.
I don't know if they were dancing or if they were just trying to move the bed a lot and make noise and whatnot, but they were definitely having sex next to me.
Oh,
yeah, it was definitely not a peak moment in life, but you know, it's definitely a memorable prom date.
I bet so. Thanks for sharing that with us, Jerry. Well, I bet that's not the only person that happened to. I've heard stories of people being sick stories. We've just heard about somebody getting engaged to her best friend who was her prom date. What about you? Hi, Patricia in West Seattle. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Sure. Yeah, I went to, I graduated from high school in the 1950s in Southern California. And prom, you talked about, you know, your son going to prom and the picture,
right,
picture off and the whole thing. But it was so normal in the 50s. I mean, it was not the big thing it is right now. There were lots of formal dances during the school year, so you didn't necessarily need a new formal. You didn't need a new dress. And you had prom committees, and you would decorate the gym and hire the music and round people up for the refreshments and get some chaperones and it all took place in the gym. And it was a big deal, but it was expected. Everybody went to prom.
So you had,
and we didn't call it prom, we called it the prom. It took a definite article.
And so you had a closet full of formal dresses to choose from?
I didn't have a closet full, but you know, I had three or four.
Wow. Do you remember which one you wore?
Yeah, I sure do. Listen, I'm one of those people who remembers what I wore to everything, starting with my brownie uniform.
what did that prom dress look like?
It was a Lance dress, and it was a Lance print, so it was white with a little pink on it,
uh-huh,
and pink cummerbund, and pink spring-a-later heels.
Wow. Well, it sounds like quite a place that you went to school.
Well, I don't think it was that far from normal. I mean, in the 50s, people did things like that.
Hmm.
We had dances. Boys asked you out, and, you know, if it was a formal affair, they wore suits. They didn't wear tuxedos, certainly. But, you know, those dresses were all over the place. They're gorgeous. They make you feel real good. You did go get your hair done.
Yeah.
You know, you probably went out for dinner with your friends. A lot of double dating. The program card, so your date would take you, and he could fill in first, middle, and last dance.
Wow.
And then other boys would fill in your card, and your date was supposed to make sure that you danced every dance.
The dance card is just like Scarlett O'Hara at the 12 Oaks.
It's like the 1950s. You get them packed up. They were very, they were little folders, and they had little tassels on them, and you hung them around your mirror in your bedroom. And
oh, my gosh.
And, you know, you went to that whole thing. popular girls had lots of them, you know, but everybody went to prom. It was not unusual. I was even a prom princess one year. I went to prom all 3 years of high school.
Huh. Well, thank you for sharing that. You know, sort of makes me think about the movie Back to the Future. That's Patricia in West Seattle. What are your prom memories? 206-543-5869. Margaret writes, in Oregon, we still sewed our prom dresses. The design and fabric selection kept us girls busy for weeks. When everyone else was making Empire Waist puff sleeve meringues, I chose a sleek, radical Italian design in an abstract flowered heavy silk. I was very pleased. I went with my boyfriend, later my husband, kind of shy and geeky, 6'4" tall. During the dancing, I was feeling like a million bucks. My date wasn't much of a dancer. During the first slow dance, his face suddenly fell and he went white as a sheet. Shocked, I asked him what was wrong. Your dress is coming apart. I thought he was going to faint. I love that dress, and bless her, my mother saved it. I have it to this day. Maybe I'm going to make it again. That was certainly a memorable prom experience. Hi, Mary Ellen on Seattle's First Hill. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I'm going to date myself a little. Not as far back as the 50s, but in the 60s, we also made our prom dresses. And they always were accompanied. They were usually sleeveless, not strapless, but sleeveless with long elbow-length white gloves with pearl buttons at the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
We had these cards. We did it. Our prom was in the gym. And my first prom, I was so excited. I was a freshman. Everybody went. And it was canceled because President Kennedy was assassinated.
That would be incredibly memorable.
Very, very memorable. And it was subsequently,
So we're having a little bit of squealing on your phone line, so I'm going to have to let you go. That was Mary Ellen First Hill, her first prom canceled because of the assassination of President Kennedy. David in Kirkland, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
I ended up going to the prom with someone I did not intend to, up until the day before, anyway.
You want to elaborate on that?
Sure. My girlfriend and I were going to go, and unfortunately things were kind of on the rocks for us for a little while, and I called her up the night before to make arrangements as to what time I'd pick her up and whatnot, and she said, why don't you find someone else to go with? And,
oh.
Yeah, so I was shocked, to say the least. I was calling her from the mall, so it was very noisy there, so I said I'd call her back when I got home, and she didn't, no one answered, and I called again, and I called again, and so I'm thinking, what am I going to do? So I ended up calling this girl who I was kind of, you know, liked, you know how it is in high school,
mm-hmm.
and liked her a lot, actually, and she said yeah, so I ended up going with her, and then by the time I got to the, everything was going great until we actually got to the prom, and then all these people were like, David, what about Dawn, you know, and she was there waiting for you.
What?
And yeah, it was pretty sad.
Oh, no. So what did you do with your friend that you kind of liked?
Well, we were still, you know, the night went on, and we had a great time and all, but boy, when I got back to school the following Monday, were rumors flying about everything at that point. I was able to smooth things over, but, you know, and tell my side of the story. But unfortunately, I really regret, you know, the way things turned out, of course, because, you know, my intended date, you know, she's probably making a phone call into some show in Michigan where we were living at the time to tell about her side, and everyone's thinking, oh, that guy's horrible, and yeah.
Well, we have your side of the story, David, so thanks for sharing that with us.
Okay, sure, you bet.
Bye-bye. That was David in Kirkland. Did you go to your high school prom? Did somebody stand you up? Did the man or woman or whoever of your dreams ask you out, or did you pine longingly across the gym or wherever your prom was held? 206-543-KUOW. Rachel writes, in my junior year, a friend and I decided at the last minute to go to prom together, and that meant I had about a week to scrounge together a dress. I wasn't able to get the whole night off of work for prom night. I had to work 4 hours before racing home to get changed and go to prom. I was working at a local German restaurant, which, like many, had some unpleasant secrets behind the scenes. One was a troublesome drain and sewer system that had drains in the kitchen. Of course, that night, the system backed up, and the whole kitchen was 2 to 3 inches deep in black, stinking water. I felt grosser and grosser as the evening went on, and I was forced to add a compulsively scrubbing shower to my cram prom evening. As a result, we didn't even have time to get in at a nice restaurant for dinner. We had a drive-through Taco Bell on prom night. Well, you remember it in any case. Thanks for that memory about prom night. Hi, Anne in Seattle. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, here's a prom story. I had ski lessons that day of our senior prom, and I had not planned to go to the dance at all. But in our household, we had taken in a foster guy that was the same age, senior at the same school. Neither of us were planning to go, but my mother said, it's your senior prom. You have to go. So after I dragged in from skiing, and I'm all sweaty and dirty and had nothing to wear, my mother dressed me in an old dress of my sister's and dragged the guy up from the basement, you know, the foster kid, and neither of us drove, so she had to drive us to the dance. We got there, we kind of looked at each other and said, we don't really want to dance together, do we? And so,
oh, no.
It's like going with your brother, you know? So he walked to one side of the gym and stood there with a bunch of guys, and I walked to the other side of the gym and stood there with a bunch of girls, and, well, I guess I went to my prom, didn't I?
Yo, no. That's like, that is the worst kind of memory, and I'm picturing it right now.
Do it for your mother.
Yeah, do it for your mother. That's not a good reason. In hindsight, I know you know that, and you probably knew it while you were there. Thanks for sharing that story with us. And from Seattle, we go now to the Ballard neighborhood. Hi, Kelly. You're on the air.
Hi.
Oh, you want to tell us your prom story?
Yes. So junior prom, I did not have a date. And about 3 days before prom, I really wanted to go. And I was at Thriftway with my girlfriend, and there was a bag boy who was very cute, who I'd seen before. I didn't know his name. He didn't go to my high school, but I asked him if he had a maroon cummerbund to match my maroon dress. And he said that he would be there. So he picked me up at my house with the maroon cummerbund and the corsage, and we went to prom. And everything was going fine until I realized that he was going because he actually liked the girl that I was with at Thriftway.
Oh.
And so he ended up dancing with her all night.
Oh.
But her date did not like that. And they ended up getting in a tussle at the end of the evening. And my final dance was to Lady in Red. And my dance was, my date was crying the whole time and he had a black eye.
I shouldn't laugh. That's not funny. But oh my gosh,
it is now. But at the time, it kind of ruined my evening. But that's high school for you.
It is, and things seem so momentous. But that's almost like the plot of a John Hughes film.
So yes, that's my prom story.
Thank you for sharing that, Kelly. We are taking for a few more minutes your prom stories here as. Actually, prom season's winding to a close. Hi, Susan and Olympia. Thanks for holding.
Hi. I had a wonderful dinner, dance, and then we went and had a big bonfire on the beach. It was just a wonderful evening. Came home, and my mom said, "You are in big trouble. Your dad is out looking for you." And they had never told me that I should be home at a certain time, and I really shivered in my bed.
Oh, no. Did that ruin all the memories?
No, thank goodness. It's pretty funny now, and I can understand as a parent my dad's concern.
Yeah, no kidding, but it sounds like at least it was a wonderful fun.
It was, and it was just before the whole cultural revolution and hippie movement, so I wore the big pretty dress that I never ever wore again and had that experience, so I'm glad.
Thanks for sharing that. That was Susan and Olympia. Kathleen writes, I bought my prom dress in 1968. It came from a store called Remix that was owned by the actress Lee Remix family. I kept that dress all these years, and when I was talking to my adult daughter about it, I decided to try it on. I'm long past my prom, but I was happy to find that dress still fits, and Kathleen sent us a photo of that. We do have a photo montage at our website, kuow.org, where perhaps we can add Kathleen's photo. I'm not sure about the tech of how this all goes. We're going to squeeze in another call. Ari and Burien, you were a reluctant prom king?
Yeah. Well, I started DJing in junior high, so my freshman, sophomore, and junior year, I had DJed all the area proms. So by the time my senior year came up, I'd already been to about 15 different proms. So I was kind of over it. But my friends kept on saying, "No, you gotta go, you gotta go." And I didn't understand. And then come prom night, a limo pulls up in front of my house. And not only were there five of my friends, but they had brought a date too. So I get into the limo, and they have a tuxedo for me. So I actually had to change clothes in the back of the limo, and the whole thing is, I'm like, wow, guys, this is crazy. And then when I ended up finally getting to the prom, I ended up being voted prom king.
Aww.
So they had already known that, because they were on the student council and everything, so they had already known. And honestly, it was one of the best proms I'd ever been to, because I was actually there to have fun.
Oh. Well, that sounds like you have some great friends, or had some great friends then.
I had some really good friends, and they're still good friends today, decades later.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks for sharing that story. Robin writes, I was a big nerd in high school, but I was the junior class treasurer in 1972, so I had to help plan the whole prom. I desperately hoped someone would ask me, but no one did. So my friend Annie and I went to the movies to see The Godfather, the most adult film I'd ever seen at the time. It remains one of my all-time favorites. Robin, I was watching Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, so I about that same year, so I can understand that. If you are heading to a prom this year, or the parent of a child heading to a prom, I hope it's wonderful for all of you. I want to thank producer Katie Sewell and Amina Al-Sadi for putting together our wonderful montages. And you can continue to email those stories to us at weekday@kuow.org.
This is 94.9 KUOW. Support for KUOW comes from Skanska, committed to construction and development services with innovation and sustainability in mind, providing opportunities for local companies and people in the Puget Sound area since 1946. Details at usa.skanska.com.
If you'd like, you can follow KUOW on Facebook and Twitter. Check out news stories and find out what's on upcoming shows. Just go to KUOW.org and look for the words Connect with Us.
Support for KUOW comes from Vitreo Retinal Associates of Washington, announcing the opening of a new office in Mount Lake Terrace to serve patients from Snohomish and North King counties with retinal problems such as macular degeneration. More at VRAWashington.com.
53 degrees in Seattle, warming up to 60 this afternoon, partly sunny. Chance of showers this afternoon, also thunderstorms and hail possible. Tonight's low around 48 with a 50% chance of showers.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is Jack Benny talking. Jordan, Rocky Jordan.
Have you ever danced with a murderer?
This is Orson Welles speaking from London.
King County.
We're back inside the old-time radio vault. I'm Steve Scher with Katie Sewell, the producer of this program and of this old-time radio retrospective. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
We're thinking about how I am not really here, but I'm simply a compilation of sound effects, yes?
That's right. I reanimated you for this segment.
It was nice of you.
Yeah. I've been thinking a lot about sound effects, man. I think it's so interesting. We think of them as all being multi-talented and everybody can make perfect footsteps. But sound effects men were in demand, but that didn't mean that they were created equal.
Is that right?
During the golden age of radio, there was a pecking order of sound effects men. And that order was based on people's skills and experience. And even more than that, it actually reflected what they were good at, technically.
So this was a skill set.
This was a skill set, and there was the bottom of the pile and the top of the pile.
Tom Keith, Fred Newman, the only ones still really working today. They were from a long line of skilled practitioners.
Yes, and maybe you can guess which level they are on the pecking order when we go through it. But let's start at the bottom, right? Like we all have to in our jobs, start at the bottom. Bottom of the pyramid are the people called technicians. They are responsible for maintaining the sound effects, but their most important job was designing and building them. So without technicians, many sound effects wouldn't have existed in the first place, in any believable way, at least. Let us take a rainy street scene, for example. Just a little rain. Nice rain there.
Very nice.
The sound effects department can make rain multiple ways. They can put BBs in a can and rattle them around, or they can use tissue paper. But the problem came of what if you need it to rain during the entire scene? Then a BB can rattling back and forth, it's going to get pretty distracting. So a technician named Stuart McQuaid solved the problem by inventing the rain machine. It was a suspended box that steadily dropped sand onto a piece of sheet metal below. And you know, while we're at it, we might as well add a little thunder to that rain, shall we? Because it was Stuart who also invented the thunder screen. And technically, we should add a wagon to that because he also invented the speed control wagon wheels. All inventions by the same technician.
Really?
I would argue...
Wait, what was his name again?
Stuart McQuaid.
Oh, all right.
So that's the technicians, bottom of the heap as far as radio sound effects are concerned. Believe it or not, you would think the people making the sound effects would be a little further up from the bottom. Certainly above the next level, in my opinion, the next notch up were the button pushers. And these were the people who were assigned to shows that didn't have very many sound effects, shows like soap operas. They were called button pushers because many of their sound effects literally just had a button to make the sound. Doorbells. Or perhaps you want a door chime buzzer instead. It's pretty obnoxious. I'm really glad our doors don't sound like that. What about an oven timer? Or a tea kettle? Lemonade? Anyone? You get the idea. That's a button pusher's job. Sounds like that. And many button pushers didn't like being button pushers.
Really?
Mainly because it was boring. If you can imagine just digging a kitchen timer, like, and that's your main cue for 1 hour or something like that.
Because that's what they were doing. This was when everything had to be live.
Yeah.
Right.
So they're like ding dong, maybe three times an hour. But the upside of their job was that it was a lot easier. And so
they weren't all stressed out.
Yeah. And frankly, the hours were better because the soap operas were on during the day. And at this point, sound effects men aren't getting paid based on what they can do. They're all getting paid exactly the same. So in some ways, you know, button pushers, if you just wanted to dial it in, that would be the spot to be, right?
Oh, they weren't getting paid less than the others?
Nope.
Oh, really? All right.
Nope.
Okay, button pushers.
It's all
pushers.
About pride and artistry here, all not right. money.
So now that's now the next level. These
yes.
are the artists.
Let's move up to the artists. Yes, the next level. The artists. These were the people who could be put onto any type of show, and they would do a really great job, and they're in high demand. For the more complicated scenes, there might be four artists that are working together. Frankly, radio studios didn't really want to hire more than one sound person if they could get away with it. Now, whether or not one sound man could actually handle the whole job had a lot to do with the amount of sounds required and their complexity, but it also mattered where the sounds were located in the script. For example, it's pretty easy to make the sound of typing on a typewriter. And it's easy to knock on a door. But doing them at the same time is really, really, really hard. See?
Yeah, that would be hard. It's like rubbing your stomach and patting your head.
Yeah, a former radio sound effects man, Richard Mott, was the one that gave me that example. And he suggests that if people don't believe that that would be hard, to give it a try. So everybody get ready. Everyone out there, now pretend that you're typing continuously with one of your hands and then knock on a door or on your desk with the other. So, could you do it? Did it work?
I don't think so. I can't even push buttons and read a script at the same time, which is what I'm trying to do right now.
Let's move on to the next category, shall
please,
we?
Okay. I think so.
All right. The very top of the heap of sound effects artists. These are the people called the stars. And their skills weren't really different from the artists, but they were different because they were showmen. They weren't behind-the-scenes types of people. They loved performing sound effects in a very dramatic and uninhibited way. They would take a cue that says, door opens, an avalanche of junk falls, something that would sound like this, for instance. And they would make it sound absolutely terrific, and they would also make it visually funny so that the audience would laugh. A guitar falling into a bunch of bowling pins, then smashing into a clock, which upsets a sword and shuffles off some roller skates, whatever they wanted. And in doing that, they would get the bigger laughs.
Where'd you say, Molly? On the shelf in this closet?
Yes, but be careful, dearie, because that shelf is loose and it's...
Yeah, running. I know. I'll get out of my way, Gildersleeve, while I get that...
Shelf.
I know you did, but I had to get that screwdriver.
What did you want the screwdriver for?
I wanted it to fix that shelf.
So they were playing to the studio audience as well as the radio audience. That mm-hmm. was very important to them.
Yes, very important.
Because that would enhance the laughter, and then the laughter would be more fun for
right.
those of us just listening.
Well, and for them, it was fun to get laughs, frankly.
Yes,
I mean, it's their chance to be performers. That's from Fibber McGee and Molly, of course. Comedy is the venue that most of the stars worked in. That way they could get their laughter and their applause. And these stars, unlike the other sound effects men, were demanding more money. They wanted overtime to set up their special effects. They wanted overtime to pack them up. They wanted overtime to go shop for something that they were missing that they wanted. So the question was, were they worth it? Well, apparently the shows thought so. And the stars really did give us some of radio's most memorable sounds, like that closet, Fibber McGee's closet that we just heard, or the sound of Jack Benny's car. Now, in this clip, listen, because, see, even Jack Benny and Mary Livingston can't get through the sound effects man's performance without laughing.
Let's get going. Start the car, Rochester.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Try it again, Rochester.
Yes, sir.
It started. It started.
Off we go into the wild blue yonder. By
So, what do you think? Do you think they were worth the extra money?
Yeah, well, and so Mel Blanc was a guy from Oregon, as a matter of fact, right? Mel Blanc worked in Portland.
AKA Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, he did a lot of Benny's sound effects as well as characters. So he was in that sense a star, right? Because he was also a vocal star. If he's Bugs Bunny.
That's interesting. Well, I was just thinking, you know, you asked about Garrison Keillor and the sound effects men from Prairie Home Companion, and I would argue that Tom Keith, who recently passed away, would have been an artist.
Oh yeah.
And I would argue that Fred Newman is a star.
I have to think about this now. Why are you saying that Tom Keith is less of the star than Fred Newman?
Because Tom Keith liked to just do sound effects in a very fundamental way. And granted, he did do some vocal sound effects, and so he would step out of his box. But he was a lot more comfortable doing things the old-fashioned way and making the sounds with, you know, the different props that he had. Whereas Fred Newman would like to do everything with his mouth, if possible.
When Garrison does those, they seem like extemporaneous essays,
yes.
and the sound effects man has to make the sounds to go with it. That's Fred Newman really just hamming it up, having a great time with his voice and his mouth.
It's his
instrument.
Getting to play.
I see.
They're playing. So those are the ranks. Sound effects positions during the Golden Age. Technician, button pusher, artist, star. And of course, the studio management had no idea that these rankings even existed. They thought any sound effects man could do anything. But
well,
luckily,
that's management for you.
Yeah, luckily the directors and the producers could see the distinction.
Well, that's fun. All right, well, now you can put me back in my component pieces, and I'll go back into the box.
Yes, I'll push a few buttons here, and I'll see if I can send you back off on your sabbatical.
All right, Katie.
Bye,
Steve. What do you send me back off on my what? Katie, you know they call it professional leave at the university, but what are you saying?
Well, we're not going to call it professional leave on the air, because what is professional leave? It sounds like you shot somebody, and we're having to like evaluate whether or not you can keep your position. What you're really doing is working on projects outside of the radio station.
Oh, I never thought of it that way. If only you could have had a sound effect to go with that.
Maybe I'll insert a gunshot afterwards.
Oh, my. All right. This is Weekday. Talk to you on the radio.
Bye, Steve. And now joining us like she does every week for our Thursday lunch recommendation, food writer Sarah Dickerman. She writes for Slate, the New York Times, and other publications, and she blogs at sarahdickerman.com. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there.
So what do you got for us today?
Well, you know, every now and then something that's like got a really simple setup strikes me as particularly good. And there's a little coffee shop at the top of Madison as it's coming up from the lake at 23rd, and it's called El Portal, and they roast their own coffee, which is sort of notable in itself. But it's they also serve tamales, which are made by the barista's mom, and they're really good tamales, and they struck me as particularly delicious.
Now, I think it's interesting that I looked at the website, and there's no mention of these tamales on the web.
I know.
So is this just an impromptu thing that they're doing, do you know, or...?
You know, I think it's a. I don't know the full story, but they have them every day. I've gone a couple times, and then on the weekends they bring in also these things called picadas, which are a kind of like a tamale, a thicker tamale, and it's pinched up at the edge almost like a little tartlet. I haven't gone on the weekends to try those, but I have had the tamales, and they're two of the versions that they serve are wrapped in banana leaves. And banana leaves give this incredibly fragrant, herbaceous quality to the tamale, which I think is one of the reasons they're sort of striking to me.
And what else sets them apart? You said that they're the best tamales you've ever had. Is it?
Oh, I think they're among the best I've had in Seattle. I probably have had a few other delicious ones down in Southern California to compete. But they're just a little light in texture. They're not quite so leaden as some tamales can be. And then I really like this one that was mixed together with black beans throughout the masa, which is the corn paste that makes the body of the tamale. The tamal, if it's an individual, and it's flavored with avocado leaf, which also gives this sort of nutty, interesting flavor that's a little hard to pin down. So I think there's just a little more subtlety rather than just pure strapping comfort food to these tamales.
And how did you end up stumbling across this? Did you just go in for a cup of coffee at El Portel and smelled something in the air?
I have my ears pricked up always and always am interested in suggestions. People can look me up on Twitter if they have a suggestion for a restaurant, a lunch restaurant. But a friend had noticed the shop and had heard about them, and so I thought I'd check it out.
So that's El Portel at Madison and 23rd. It's a coffee shop, but you'll find excellent tamales there, according to Sarah Dickerman. So if you're eating a lot of tamales for lunch, Sarah, you probably should go maybe something lighter, more vegetarian for dinner.
I always think that if you've had a nice big strapping lunch, there's room for a salad at dinner. So so I just look back to one of my favorite food writers named Jane Grigson, who was a translator. She's British and spent a lot of time throughout Europe and did these really great books that were sort of encyclopedic, but a very personal version of an encyclopedia. So she has a book called Jane Grigson's Vegetable Book. And so each vegetable is introduced almost like a character in a novel. She's got a really fun way with words. She'll tell you like it is. If she likes a vegetable above others, she'll let you know. And then if she thinks another vegetable's sort of useful, but maybe not quite as dramatic ingredient, she'll let you know that. For example, she says, there are better vegetables than kohlrabi, and worse. And then she proceeds to give you, you know, three recipes that are perfectly good things to do with kohlrabi, including a soup. And you know, that's helpful for those of us who subscribe to CSA baskets and get vegetables. You know, some are very favorites, and some are, you know, you don't know what to do with. And this is a great kind of book to have around the house. And it's just really lively, and she loves old varieties of vegetables, too, so you can sometimes learn about interesting gardening ideas. And I just find her voice really both inspiring and fun and a little bit wicked from time to time.
We all have that experience if you get a CSA box. Right now I have about 2 pounds of leeks that I'm facing and thinking, what in the world should I be doing with these?
Oh, leeks are a great joy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You can just cut them up, rinse them, and sort of melt them down over a medium-low fire with butter, and that can make the base of a great soup, a great pasta sauce. Put it on toast with some goat cheese. You've got yourself a nice start to a meal.
Wow, Sarah, maybe I should start having you on to teach us recipes as well. Sarah Dickerman writes for Slate, the New York Times, other publications. She blogs at sarahdickerman.com. Today she recommended El Portel at Madison and 23rd, and for the cookbook, Jane Grigson's Vegetable Book. She joins us every Thursday with a lunch recommendation. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
Weekday is produced by Jason Pagano and Amina Alsadi. Jack Walters is at the helm. Marcy Silman is in for Steve Scherer while he's on sabbatical. I'm Katie Sewell. Thanks. Talk to you tomorrow.
This is KUOW 94.9 News and Information.
Time when freezing human eggs was rare, experimental, even. Not anymore.
When Kim Kardashian says on her reality show, gosh, maybe I should freeze my eggs. I mean, that's a big moment, unfortunately, in our culture.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. The business of egg freezing heats up next time on Marketplace. That and the numbers from Wall Street as well. It's from 8 p.m.
You can catch that tonight at 6:30 as part of KUOW's Afternoon News Magazine from 3 to 8.
Support for KUOW comes from Women's Therapy Referral Service. For over 35 years, helping people find the right therapist through personalized matching and in-person consultation. Details online at therapyreferral.org.
53 degrees in Seattle, cloudy skies, expecting a high today around 60, partly sunny with a chance of showers, thunderstorms, and hail possible this afternoon as well. KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services. Online at KUOW.org. It's 11 o'clock.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.